All right, let's get started. My name is Justin Lundy, and I'm a security engineer at Intercept Security Technologies. They're a developer of server protection solutions based in San Jose, California. I'm a member of their ECAT subdivision, and they perform R&D for analyzing exploits and developing countermeasures that they can include in their server software protection. My responsibilities there include exploit and tool development, automation of attacks, signature writing, and things of that nature. Before I worked at Intercept, I worked for a company called SecureSoft as a software engineer, and they were developing a secure distributed enterprise network management system. I also worked at New Dimensions International, where I authored technical computer security training courses and gave them to the Fortune 500 companies and the military and the Army. I've lectured on things from a sociological analysis of the computer underground to current attacks and countermeasures. And other people that have worked for NDI that you might have heard of include Mudge, Rout, William Knowles, and Peter Shipley and Brian Martin. Okay, the purpose of my lecture today is to answer questions that I had when I was looking into intrusion detection system technology, and hopefully you have the same questions that I did. Let's start with the definition of an intrusion detection system. According to RFC 2828, this is quoted directly, a security service that monitors and analyzes system events for the purpose of finding and providing real-time or near real-time warning of attempts to access system resources in an unauthorized manner. Okay, why would you want an IDS? Well, first of all, existing security has not proven itself in the face of expanding network and contracted time to market. Companies have fewer months to develop products and get them out and making money off of them, so they need increased security. Another reason is that negligence of securing against insider attacks because you only have firewalls and you only have traditional security isn't enough. You need to also have intrusion detection systems to increase accountability. IDSs help because they provide additional information and information and tracing capabilities. For example, if you get a network attack, it'll tell you who the owner of the net block is and things like that. IDSs are cool too. An intrusion detection system can help you in several ways. First of all, they'll monitor and analyze user system and network security. If you have a host-based IDS, it can analyze the commands that are being typed in. It can analyze system calls. If you have a network IDS, it can give you network information as far as how many people are connecting to your POP3 server and how many are trying overflows. An IDS will also help you because it'll audit system configurations and scan for vulnerabilities. I consider vulnerability scanners intrusion detection because it's just intrusion detection at a stage before you get hacked. You're picking up the notice that you have a vulnerability even before someone can send the attack and you can detect it. So it's kind of early warning intrusion detection. They can also analyze data integrity of critical files like tripwire using MD5 hashes to make sure they haven't been modified. They can recognize indications of known attacks, obviously, and they can also help manage audit trails and assist in analysis. There are some things, however, that an IDS can't do, and that would be compensating for weak identification and authentication checks. For example, you may have a network and you're locked down and you have firewalls and you have IDS, but you're not going to be protected against someone that trojans your SSH client on your laptop at home and logs in through that box. And additional things like, you know, plain text protocols, IDS won't help you there. IDSs can't compensate for weaknesses in specs. Software libraries, for example, like I think libxt had a problem. That would be an example there. They can't compensate for weak operating systems. You can't build a castle on a swamp. If you're trying to create a bastion host off a SunOS 2.5.1 box, for example, that would be building a castle on a swamp. An IDS can't replace comprehensive intuition-based investigation. For example, if you are subjected to a security breach and you usually have your site security officer look into the details of the attack, the IDS can't be as comprehensive as the site security officer would be because, you know, he doesn't have human intuition. An IDS won't create your security policies. You usually have to hire a consulting company for that. An IDS also can't analyze all traffic on the network and maintain infinite state because there's just too much data, especially with 100 megabit networks and gigabit networks come out. IDSs also won't run themselves. Let's get into some terminology here. CIDF. This means Common Intrusion Detection Framework. And it specifies a grammar for typing IDS information for use among heterogeneous intrusion detection systems so that they can communicate as a standardized language so that they'll be able to talk. I'll be able to get into the details of CIDF in a minute, the basic components of which are, let's start with eBoxes. These are the event generators in intrusion detection systems. eBoxes are typically a NIC set in promiscuous mode with the related sniffing software. An ABOX, or analysis engine, it's the smarts of the IDS. There are many different methods that ABOXes can use to examine data for potential attacks, including but not limited to combinations of pattern matching, profiling, attack graph creation, fuzzy logic, AI neural networks, and you can get very, very theoretical and scientific in all of the methods that you use for analysis. An IDS is useless without an ABOX. Another component of an intrusion detection system under the CIDF terminology would be the DBoxes, and these are just humongous log files of data and activities, and it's the memory of the intrusion detection system. Countermeasures, the CBoxes. These initiate responses to detected attacks and can be very dangerous. A good example of this in the open source arena would be Abacus Port Sentry, where if someone port scanned you, you could get it to automatically throw up some IP chains, firewall rules, or add an entry in your host.deny or things of that nature. There was a problem with that because people could spoof a port scan from a random IP, let's say your upstream gateway. Yeah, big problem. The military uses them in InfoWar. Okay, let's get into some polemics of IDS. There are several problems with intrusion detection systems. You got to think about how they're being implemented. There are different methods, and I'll talk about most of them here. Okay, well, where does the intrusion detection system operate, and what does it monitor? That would be in kernel versus user space. How does it collect, analyze, and store data? That would be distributed versus atomic. Is it within the box? Is it between boxes? Where does it collect, analyze, and store the data is also host-based versus network-based. How does it detect attacks? Is it statistical? Does it look for 100 repeated login failures, or does it look for a specific attack signature? Does it actively probe for information or just listen to what it can hear? That's active versus passive. How does it respond to intrusion attempts and when? Proactive or retroactive? And how is the data collection, analysis, and storage organized? That would be flat versus hierarchical. Okay, there are several attack detection models. The first and most popular would definitely be signature detection. You'll also hear it referred to as misuse detection or direct evidence, or sometimes insider attack, but I'll just call it signature detection. There's also a statistical anomaly detection, which would be profiling of traffic. For example, you're only going to see our network administrator SSHing in a machine between the hours of 9 to 5, so if you see someone coming in at 3 a.m. from a Russian box, you could probably use that as your anomaly. And then there's combinations of both. They can be used with both host-based or network-based systems. Okay. Now, ABoxes. These maintain a database of known attacks and compare current activity with the signatures yielding a binary decision as to whether or not it was an intrusion attempt. For example, choose your exploit, any random exploit. Qpop, bind, tsig. Anything with an attack profile that can be quantified into a fingerprint can be easily detected by these intrusion detection systems. There are some pros and cons with A-boxes. First of all, the plus side would be their signatures, and hence the attacks that they can detect can be arbitrarily complex. You can define most buffer overflow attacks, most remote buffer overflow attacks, by looking for the specific string that they're sending to the port at any given time during the attack. Or for an HTTP attack, you can look for %C0, %AF to determine that it's a Unicode hack attack attempt. Another note for attack signature detection is that it can be tightly targeted. In addition, attack signature detection is great because it's low overhead. When you have statistical anomaly detection, you're generally using a lot of floating point operations, and that'll bog down your NIDs or your HIDs. But if you're using signature detection, it's usually an integer decision, yes or no. Also, signature detection is very effective at catching known attacks, very effective. However, there are some drawbacks. For example, I'll get into Potasik and Newsham's paper, Insertion, Evasion, and Denial of Service, later to explain how you can defeat some of these signature detection mechanisms because of the way they're implemented. Depending on the intrusion detection systems, usually local signatures can be added, custom ones, on a site-by-site basis if you have some special software that you contracted a company out to write for your web farm at your ISP. You'll be able to write signatures to detect attacks against those particular applications. There's a low false alarm rate with signatures because that's what the signature effect is designed to elicit. However, they're not very scalable because the more signatures you have, the larger your database is, and you're killing your low overhead advantage. When you had previously had a series of, you know, quick integer decisions to determine if it was a specific attack or not, now you have 900 decisions each time you have to make that decision. So it can slow it down significantly. A drawback is that it'll only detect known attacks or attack patterns. It doesn't have the advantage that statistical anomaly detection has in that respect. And signature databases will always lag behind the most recent vulnerability discoveries. IDS vendors usually have their vulnerability research teams, like ISS has X-Force and NAI has PGP Covert Labs. And Intercept, the company I work for, has ECAT. And they're responsible for keeping up to date with vulnerabilities and analyzing them and putting them into the internal databases so that they can write rules for detecting them and protecting against them. But as I said, you're always going to lag behind what's floating around on the net. Statistical anomaly detection, another method that A-boxes use. These systems build profiles of activity, and they compare the current activity to the recorded activity and determine if the current activity exceeds some type of threshold, and you can set several different thresholds. For example, you can record all system calls and arguments. For example, the rates of send mail while in normal operation, and if one day send mail executes exec VE bin SH, you know something funky's going on, this would be anomalous behavior, which could be flagged. So if an IDS has in-kernel components, the exec call would also be forced to fail. It could be forced to fail if you are trying to do intrusion prevention as well at the kernel level. This tends to work particularly well for buffer overflow attacks. And the exploited binary generally executes something very far from its recorded profile. You could determine what the typical behavior of sendmail is supposed to be, which files it's supposed to open, which directories it needs read access to, things of that nature. Pros and cons. You can detect unknown attacks. That is the biggest pro for statistical anomaly detection. You can also potentially detect extraordinary complex attacks. However, the major drawback is you can miss unknown attacks because you're not using signatures. You're just looking for anomalies. And the deviational thresholds can be difficult to calculate and establish. The system can be conditioned to alter the normal behavior profile. You can start injecting traffic into the network, and you'll throw off the standard value that the network's supposed to have, and the traffic that you inject in after that it won't be considered anomalous. It'll be considered normal because you changed the normal value. Also, you can avoid being detected as an anomaly if you know the profile already. The drawback that you're going to have to deal with statistical anomaly detection in IDS is that you're going to have to install this on a network and train it when the network is in a known non-hacked state. A problem, though, is you're going to have high false alarm rates because it's just looking for anomalies, and it doesn't deal legally and gracefully with abrupt changes in activity. For example, if you've got one of your users that's always SSHing into a machine and you're calculating their typing rate, words per minute, and you see that he's typically typing between 80 and 125, and then all of a sudden he's typing 165, or he's typing 55. I don't know, maybe he was on something that day, or maybe he lost his girlfriend, so he's typing different. They would flag it as an anomaly, but it's still legal. So that's one of the drawbacks there. We can get to e-boxes now. All right. E-boxes use different technologies so that you can collect data and generate events. And some of these are overlapping categories, but that's okay. E-boxes, they can be network monitors. You know, they can be a NIC on the network sniffing. They can be host monitors at user land level or kernel level. You can have tripwires on the host level. They can be vulnerability assessment tools, honeypots, or OS commands, which could also be considered host monitoring. And I'll get into each one of these. Okay, let's start with host monitors. There's characteristics of host monitors that you should all be familiar with. They're host-based. They're atomic. They can be in kernel or user space. They can be signature-based or statistical. They can be passive or active, proactive or retroactive, flat or hierarchical. Now, there's pros and cons to host monitors. A pro would be, a con would be that there's tons of information to go through. If you're intercepting every exec call, every open call, every RMDIR, every MKDIR, you're going to have a ton of data to go through, especially if it's on a really high traffic web server. You got a Sun E10K, and you're serving 10 million pages a day. It's going to be a lot of system calls that you're sifting through. So there's going to be system overhead when you're running there. Host monitors aren't very good, they're very good for identifying isolated or host-based attacks, but they're completely useless for network attacks. One advantage of host monitors is that they can operate in encrypted environments. Right now, there's word floating around that people are finally beginning to realize that network intrusion detection systems are useless for protecting against HTTP attacks when the attacker is wrapping his attack with OpenSSL, for example. So he connects to the 443 port on the web server rather than 80, so that even though he's doing a successful web-based attack, let's say it's Unicode to an NT machine, it's not going to flag anything, and he's just going to get right through. And that's in really fine print in IDS documentation out there for network IDS vendors, that we can't handle encryption. Okay, host monitors are trustworthy unless you're compromised, naturally. They're platform-specific, so usually there's a bit of lag before a vendor can come out with it on varying Unix operating systems, on all the flavors that exist. One of the drawbacks, unfortunately, is that there's system performance degradation on your production systems like your web servers and your mail servers. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any talk about the compromise of using something like escrow encryption, where instead of having escrow keys stored with some kind of government entity, having to be privately escrowed keys for the use of NIDs?
I haven't been looking into the details of key escrow in relation to network intrusion detection, but it's something I'd be interested in reading about. We can talk afterwards. Okay, there's some data analysis issues with host-based intrusion detection systems. If the analysis is done locally on the HIDs, for example, you have the entire HIDs placed on your production server, there's going to be even more system performance degradation, and you're going to have a single point of failure. If the analysis is done remotely, there's network overhead, bandwidth and latency, potentially data vulnerability, and DOS attack. However, you're going to have the load placed on your analysis console rather than on your HIDS machine. Another issue would be that you can't detect or correctly identify enterprise-wide attacks or network attacks. That's kind of obvious, but it's something you should still keep in mind. Management, deployment, analysis, and maintenance of audit trails on 200 web servers, each running their own independent host-based IDS, can be overly time-consuming. So hopefully, if you go with a HIDS solution, you're going to want something that's distributed that has a central console that'll allow you to manage them all easily. And it's going to be vulnerable to OS vulnerabilities on the platform that you install the HIDS. Network monitors, okay. There are characteristics of network monitors you should be familiar with also. They're network-based. They can be distributed or atomic in kernel and user space, signature or statistical, passive or active, proactive or retroactive, flat or hierarchical. Advantages would be they can capture a wider range of attacks than host-based, particularly enterprise-wide, slow and low or network sweeps, ping sweeps, across, you know, class C or class B. They can be very proactive if you pick the right product. They can be good at indicating outside attacks when used on well-configured bastion hosts, honeypots, and DMZs. Network sniffing only degrades the performance of the monitoring machine. A dedicated IDS host means less services, more secure, and less discomfort for the users. A plus and minus at the same time. You can monitor multiple machines' communications with one monitor, making deployment and management easier, but also provides a good avenue for denial of service due to the fact that it's attempting to simulate the state of multiple machines. A drawback would be it's a single point of failure for an entire network unless it has redundant information sources, for example, two NICs, or you have two different network monitors placed in two different spots on the network for redundancy. Another drawback would be it doesn't have access to the true internal state of all the hosts on the network it's monitoring, and it's currently a huge problem if you're faced with sophisticated attackers, and I'll mention Ptasic's paper at the end. Another drawback would be that subversion of networks, protocols, and the implementations that the monitor depends on underneath on the network. If you violate those protocols, you can thoroughly confuse a monitor. Another drawback, you can't catch anything that doesn't hit the wire. For example, you can have a guy walk up to a console and completely root 10 of your machines and you wouldn't even know it. So there's an argument for saying that you're going to want host-based IDS and network-based IDS at your company or your home. A drawback is VPNs and other encrypted protocols can decrease the efficacy of a network-based IDS, and switch networks are problematic. Tripwires. These were developed a long time ago, but they're still somewhat popular. The characteristics are it's host-based, they're atomic, user-space, signature-based, active, they can be retroactive, flat. They're very inexpensive and easy to run. Tripwire and all the free variants that you see on PacketStorm in those places. It's direct evidence. It doesn't depend on attack methodology for detection. It's low footprint, very simple to use. But the drawback is that it's completely retroactive, not real time. It'll tell you what's been changed after it's been changed, after you've been rooted, and it won't notify you in progress. So that's a severe drawback. But it's still a good idea to run them anyway. And word of advice, run Tripwire and store your hashes on a read-only media. And don't leave your tape drive mounted, things like that. Okay, vulnerability assessment. I consider vulnerability assessment, like I said earlier, intrusion detection just at a very early warning stage. The characteristics of this would be host-based or network-based. Examples of vulnerability scanners are Ballista, Retina, and ISS. It can be distributed or atomic, user space, signature, active, retroactive, and flat. An advantage would be you can uncover potential problems or malicious intent similar to Tripwire. You can automatically correct some configuration problems. I know that Retina has the ability to install service packs and patches if it detects on a local scan that you're vulnerable to some particular Windows NT problems. A disadvantage here is that it's purely retroactive, meaning you're going to find the problem only after it exists. Let's talk about honeypots. Okay, honeypots. They're host-based or network-based. They're atomic. They can be in kernel and user space, signature or statistical, passive, proactive, or retroactive and flat. An advantage is that they can delay or occupy an attacker long enough to identify them or their modus operandi. A downside would be that they can also do the same to the sysadmin or the security officer, and the hacker can observe the SSO to the point where he can determine what his modus operandi is. And a downside also is that if compromised, the honeypots make a wonderful attack platform for further exploration and shenanigans by the attacker. Operating system commands. The characteristics of OS commands, very, very similar to host-based, almost too overlapping, is that it's host-based, atomic, in kernel and user space, signature or statistical, active or passive, retroactive, flat. Now, OS commands in intrusion detection, this is an easy and well-known method. You can look at your syslog and determine, you know, which application was executed at what time if you have the right audit logging turned on. A disadvantage would be that it's a standard target of Trojan hosts. And it's vulnerable to kernel subversion and things of that nature. Okay, now C-boxes. I mentioned them briefly earlier, but an example of C-boxes would be that they can reconfigure router ACLs, update firewall rules. I know that RealSecure can actively spoof an RST packet to close a TCP connection. And some out there, Palante at DEF CON, wrote some software that would, it was a multi-threaded application. It would listen on a Linux machine. Every time it got port scanned, it would teardrop, boink, nuke the host that scanned it. So there were kids that would walk up to him and say, man, what's wrong with this machine? Every time I port scan it, I get a blip screen of death. So that would be an example of a C-box. You can find it on PacketStorm if you'd like to play around with the software. C-boxes are used by the military in information warfare engagement and by crazy hackers. Now let's talk about defeating network intrusion detection systems. Padasik and Newsham's paper, Insertion Evasion Denial of Service, explained several different methods of fragmentation of packets that will bypass certain IDS implementations. And it's a well-known problem. Recently, the open source Snort intrusion detection system had packet reassembly included in the code. One particular individual wrote all that software and gave the diff to Marty Roche, and he imported the changes, and it works great. Now, you can use FragRouter to exploit intrusion detection systems using Patasik and Newsham's methods. Doug Song wrote FragRouter, and it's basically an implementation of all the different methods that Patasik and Newsham found out would bypass IDSs. It's a userland routing daemon, pretty much. Now, Whisker, I'm sure everybody here has used Whisker. It's a CGI scanner that also does additional obfuscation and hex escaping of HTTP requests, because before Whisker was published, a lot of IDS vendors would just look for PHF. They wouldn't look for the hex escape of PHF. And now there's Unicode to worry about. There can be Unicode representations of that PHF string too, so these IDSs have to take HTTP requests and reconvert them back to a format that they can analyze before they're going to be able to determine by doing their vulnerability checks whether there was an attempt at an intrusion or not. And in defeating network intrusion detection systems, you can slip by using encryption. I'm sure a really popular one that's going to come up in the future is that people are going to be rooting NT machines left and right with Unicode over SSL, because RealSecure and all the network intrusion detection systems out there don't really pick it up yet. And there's no foreseeable change in the future that would allow them to. It's going to be a drawback always until the IDS technology is revolutionized by that company. I think that's about it for me. And defeating host-based intrusion detection systems. as soon as you can subvert the kernel, the HIDS is useless. And you can do that by, you know, sending the admin a Trojan horse in his email. He'll run it, and then it'll load an LKM, and then you're good to go. Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about the software that the company I work for is developing. It's called Intercept, and it's a server security solution. That's the lingo that they're using, but it's essentially a host-based IDS that also has in-kernel methods so that it can actually prevent attacks from succeeding. We intercept system calls and redirect them to our own version so that when someone tries to do a buffer overflow on a program, we can look at the environment that it's calling from, look for binary arguments, look for environment variables with binary data or shellcode in them, and we can have the exec call fail before they're going to be able to, you know, overwrite memory locations on the stack and crash the machine. And that works on NT and Solaris. It's signature-based. There's 300 or 350 signatures. I'm responsible for some of the signature development. And the console runs on NT, and you can have up to 1,000 agents. You can run the agents on Solaris or NT. It's an interesting product. If you want to talk with me about it a little bit later, I'll explain more details. But that's it. Thanks. Are there any questions?
Do you have any IDS systems up front that do detect unit code?
You know, I don't even think Snort has put in Unicode rules yet. And, yeah, they really lag behind what's currently floating around, even though Unicode came out 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But it would be, it's pretty easy to add rules to Snort if you just play around with it at home. You know, one-liner. Anything else? Okay, thank you.